it's just some announcement. If you're working on choice to one, then you will see some strange partial mu, and it's always defined with respect to argument. So if your argument is x minus one, it's respect to x minus one. If it's y minus x, then it's defined with respect to y minus x. It's not this respect to x. So some people have already worked on them and find some confusing part. And choice two, the most important thing is pay attention. Your p downstairs I in 3D and 4D are different. They are different by a minus sign. And a minus sign might be useful to pay attention to. And I realize in this homework, you actually wouldn't realize that having a shorthanded notation is very useful because it hides some 2e's. But this is the last one. Once you have an anti-commutator, then you don't care about what's inside that volume integral anymore. Okay, so I hope everybody get familiar with LSD in some way. Okay?
Familiar with what? LSD.
LSD.
Oh,
Remember, it was like LSD, LSD today. Remember, it's the what LSD rules part. And okay, I want to say a bunch of random things about the things that we did today, yesterday. So let's come back to our universe. Less ideal, but in our universe, so I wonder ever since why we spend the whole day on parity. In our universe, it's about, you see, Dirac write down his theory in 1929, and it takes 25 years or more, 56 more, okay, more than 25 years for somebody to realize maybe parity is not a symmetry. So for 20-ish years, plus, of course, all the hundreds of years before, we solidly believe that parity is a true symmetry. And see, why is it important though? Once it's discovered, so this is a thing I'll propose to you to calculate, because you might be interview on it, so there's no point for me doing it. So once you have an interaction like this, and if you're curious, what does this look like in the left and the right of Weyl spinner thing? It looks like this. And the idea is, before parity is discovered, nobody really, think about this too much. But then they realize, whoa, we could have just get rid of this. Because this complex conjugated itself, and you don't need that part. And if you look at the connected terms, it has the left-handed Weyl fermions forever has their own kinetic term. And look, that's and some thoughts with some thoughts, a lot of thoughts in that, 20 years more later, you saw this. That's the weak. The theory of weak interaction with SU2. And look at this label. It says we're going to discard all the right-handed fermions, says only left-handed fermion interact. And I believe the inspiration is coming from like knowing parity is broken. Because people never thought this crucial step. And of course, after you write this thing, and then you can just add the strong force, and you're like, oh, I have the standard model. So I would think realizing that parity doesn't have to be conserved contribute to some stepping stones towards actually writing down the standard model. Yeah.
This SU2L is an
The
internal symmetry.
it's the gauge symmetry that you don't want to break. It's a, the slogan is don't turn your photon into a pineapple. But of course, in standard model, you started with all this SU2L and U1. They each come with some gauge bosons. And then, but in reality, we only have this, right? And what happened here is called a spontaneous symmetry broken. It's like, okay, you can break your gauge symmetry, but you should be very aware what you're doing. Because look, you become a very different theory, has a very different particle content. No, it's not you can't do it. It's just if you do it, you're not going to end up with the same thing you start with.
But the label L is telling me about left-handed spaces.
That's right.
And that is related to space-time in some sense, because left-handed and right-handed, we get from SL2C breaking into SU2 and SU2. So somehow space-time is involved in
this L is labeling says that everything that carries a SU2 charge, or in other words, transform in this SU2 gauge symmetry in some way, are all left-handed spinners. That's all it's.
And left-handed is related to space-time.
Why?
I mean, the definition of chirality depends on the orientation you put on your space time.
And what's the point of relating to space time?
Like somehow it's not internal, but like it's an internal group, but it knows this about space time.
It knows that there are two type of two different handed fermions. One I can interact with, the other one we can't. If you call it left, right, right, left, up, down, I mean, left, right is just convenient to relate to the hand. But you can, it's just like there's two different well spinners. I can interact with one kind, not the other. That's what SU2 that the label left. And if you you'd go back to history, it says label all the left to be right, the right of left. That still works. Yeah.
What do we mean exactly by being charged under? Being charged?
Being charged, and it just means it transforms at the under. It just means that the psi under SU2 will transform with some matrix. Instead of being,
but under the global SU2.
No, that's not, this is not a global, this is a gauge. And it will transform with some matrix, which is SU2. Okay, how about we delete all these questions to standard model? Because this is way beyond what I should talk about. Okay, all right. The standard model, we're meeting in January, okay? And just let me keep talking. So the question is why charge conjugation is so important. Let's say in this room, is charge symmetry broken or not broken?
What do you mean?
Good point. I'll come back exactly. Well, that's a very good question. Okay, very good question. So let me come back to my next part, and I'll explain what I mean, and then you tell me it's broken or not, okay? So it's like I keep telling you, I know, I have been talking about this for a whole tutorial, says this is related to charge. And you're like, what? Why is it related to charge, right? So let me look at my labels. Crap, this is not labeled. Okay. So let's show you at the part that we are familiar with, because yesterday we see this, and after all those pineapple apple discussion, I told you that you can't change this Lagrange. Yeah, this is called the QED equation of motion, and remove the Poiseuille bar. Because I like this Lagrange and that it's very easy to find the equation of motion. Yeah? There is an interaction term, and there's a connected term, there's a mass term, and this little part is fixed by gauge symmetry.
Sorry,
yeah?
How does AMU act on say just multiplication?
It doesn't do anything. AMU is a vector, Poiseuille is a spinner.
It's just
You know, they're just there. This is some vector that is transformed as this. And the Lorentz doesn't have a spinner index, doesn't transform at the with the stick. Well, it'll transform with the vector. So,
I'm also sorry. Is it the classical gauge, or has it been quantum? Is it an operator or just a field?
No, they are just classical. Okay, the next step you should be familiar. So from now on, I'll ignore the math. Let's just look at these two terms, okay? Stay focused and look at two terms instead of three. And you have done this term. Remember yesterday you went through some Dirac equation, and you have to take some complex conjugate, and to find out that minus sign, the crucial minus sign, related to your say operator. Well, no, say matrix. Definitely not operator. Say matrix. Okay, so I'll do that. And I'll do it for this term too. Okay, that's all I want to do. I just want to point out a crucial difference. What's the crucial difference I want to point it out? If you look at these two terms and these two terms, what's the crucial difference? There's a sign, right? See, if you look at this is a plus, minus, and now it becomes a minus, minus. So this term compared to the connect term, I know that the connect term is going to work for the rest of calculation because I did it yesterday. So I know the only difference is this is going to flip a sign. So I'm going to skip all the derivation, which is like copying all the term right and plugging in this what this is, but you know that they are the same, so they're not going to change. What I claim is when that's all settled, I flip everything, this thing also get flipped. Because that's that. This relative sign is going to tell me there's going to be a relatively sign change between these two terms. I can't change the connected term. Connected term is kinetic term. It's not a Dirac field anymore. You change the kinetic term. So I have no choice but to flip this.
Wait, how did this, so did we take the complex conjugate again and then change the...
Yeah, exactly. So there is the CC part, and then there is some gamma star becomes, well, you tell me, I didn't do the calculation yesterday. There's something like this, and something like this, and you would say C go with psi star, give me this, say inverse, become here and delete it. And what I'm trying to tell you is everything you do with the first two terms will be from now onward remain the same and give me the correct thing, except the sign is flipped in this step.
Why should the kinetic term be called? Because it was the square root of the Klein-Gordon equation, and
it's not as a positive, but if you choose this one to be positive, you'd better be consistent. If you choose this one negative, you have to choose that one to be negative. It's a sign that you choose as this is my Dirac equation, and don't change your Dirac equation during your derivation. Okay?
And what about the meaning? What would the physical meaning be if it was?
Means like you choose gamma equals minus gamma. I don't think there is physical meaning about between kinetic term and the mass term. It's just what Dirac wrote and everybody uses it. You change sign means you're working with all the different gamma, with like you're working in a completely different system compared to the rest of the world. Your system would work. But
what if you change the sign of the minus I gamma mu d mu, you could say that you're
no, you want to maintain this sign.
Yeah.
to be the same size this time.
If you change it, it means that your mass is changing, basically.
No, because you don't change mass.
Sign out.
You don't change mass. Well, so?
So what would that mean? Why not say antiparticle has negative mass?
No, the mass is not changing. If you change the relative sign, you have to first interpret your first line. The antiparticle has the same mass as the. And also, we're not even doing with particle. The psi doesn't correspond to a particle. The psi, this is something important. Because psi has B and a C dagger. So this is an important point. Maybe I should emphasize now and rather wait until your group project. Is psi never corresponding to any particle? Psi corresponding to both. This level of understanding is trying to say, look, if you do this charge conjugation of the field, whatever that is supposed to mean, if you look at the QED, your charge indeed get flipped. It's a level one understanding. It says, if the rest part of the Dirac equation didn't change, the only thing that changed is the middle term. That means you seem to be carrying a different charge. What does that supposed to mean? Well, it means that this creates a antiparticle. So you get some minus Q. This one destroys a particle. You get another mass minus Q, which is very good. You're consistent. Your field seems to be carrying some charge. So, and if you want to work with any Dirac equation you want, I mean, you can work, but that you have to interpret your own Dirac equation. It better be consistent with the physics. And if you work, start with your own Dirac equation, you will derive your own result, and you have to interpret your own result. I kind of do it right on the board, because apparently nobody else bothered to use a different Dirac equation. But I don't think they mean anything. You change this sign, okay, gamma change this sign. So. And the next thing I want to say is let's be more deeper, digging a little deeper, not very deep, about what's going on. So I feel that this part is labeled as P and C. And I realize this is a fun fact. Everywhere else, this department is called Human Resources. Only in our building called People and Culture. I think there's a reason. They're trying to tell us what's important. All right. So yesterday, you guys are very correct to stop me from writing down something like this. So today, I feel I should owe you an explanation. As I said, this thing contains some B, some C dagger. Let's just take a B, for example. And now put the label back. And you ask what a parity actually does to a particle. And now you imagine a particle zoom around. And you realize what it does is to flip the momentum and change the spin. Well, no, flip the momentum, keep the spin. Just think about the particle zooming around. And you can see the slightly more complicated explanation of that in some footnote due to Jackie and Jessica. They really keep me, the version 3 of the note, which might not be uploaded. But in the latest version, I spend more time digging into where this come from. This can be proved. Okay, so the thing is, what happens if you do the mode expansion of the psi, which now is a operator? So our understanding is more like on the classical level. But now if you say psi has a mode expansion, it has an operator, and this P and the P inverse, all P, no P, doesn't matter, because P squared equals one. And you see that the if the op it acts on the creation annihilation operator this way, and nothing else acts on the Hilbert space, so you can carry these calculations through. So there is a psi mode expansion in the craziest way, because I believe that you have all get used to that there's no index. But anyway, if you have a mode expansion and you know how these things transform and that the, all the rest of the things don't transform, it's just a simple thing that, like, there are lots of things wrong in this circle, but it tells us there's something transform, something don't, and you carry through this calculation, and which is done in the notes. Then you'll get that. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm still kind of confused on why we're doing P psi P inverse, whereas in the tutorial we assumed, yeah, that was the operator. So does that make it different from like D lambda? Because in the tutorial we had like D lambda acting on.
Yeah, it does, because if you I write it out this will give me that. X on spinner space. In spinner space, there's only one index. Mm-hmm. And psi is also an operator. And as soon as you mention operator, it comes with two of them, because the argument you made in your homework one. So it depends. It really depends on what is acting on what. So there is also something like U with a spinner index, but who cares? You're not an operator, you can get out. So it's again about all these identities. So you have all these monster identities. Review what they are. Maybe you know the monster identity, but then I should add for the parity operator, it's an operator acting on the Hilbert space. So this lives in the Hilbert space, or more like acting on Hilbert space. Then only Hilbert space related things will be changed.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So you're saying the parity operator that we're acting is an operator on the Hilbert space, and therefore we.
You depends on when you ask. Yeah. You have the it can be other things, but in this particular equation, it's an operator acting the Hilbert.
Yeah, so we can plot the coefficients.
Exactly.
Have we determined what the representation, what the operator P is, the parity operator is?
That you read notes.
Okay.
As I say, it's a very subtle issue. You have to read like all the things that is like parity. Parity. You have to go through all those, and then eventually you'll believe me this happens. But they are all in the notes. Okay, so now I'm going to make a similar comment that this does happen with charge conjugation, and now these, okay. Whatever, it's operator. It's the operator, just like these P's, they are the operator acting on the Hilbert space. It's not the C constant matrix that I wrote here. This is the C we found yesterday. And there, it's a similar idea. Then you ask, what happens if this operator, they basically, it turns a particle into an antiparticle and doesn't do anything else. And If you, okay, I just don't want to draw the. Okay. If you believe this and go to the mode expansion, take a star, then go to the mode set, not taking a star, and you get something, right? Because you know how the operator change and then either the coefficients are coefficients, then you look at what's on the right and you compare. It works. This is worked out in Weinberger in a very different notation. But yeah, if you come to me, I'll tell you how this works. It's a few steps that I only thought about this morning, so I didn't write it up. So, but this works. You can ask, Weinberger has very weird notation. But
is the second line a definition, the seaside star, I mean, the right hand side?
That's right.
That's the definition.
Exactly. Transformation. Just the operator. Keep all your coefficients and you end up, but then you'll get a sum field, right? After they transform into operator, these things disappear, you will have some field. And then you can do some, all this Lorentz business, Lorentz star business, and then you'll show that that works.
The spin and momentum kept.
It's the same. It only for charge conjugation acting on a particle, it literally just changed to the antiparticle and that don't do anything. So now with this definition that the charge conjugation would change a particle into the antiparticle, come back to my question, which is asked too early, but now you should be able to tell you in our room, is the charge conjugation a symmetry or not a symmetry? Not a symmetry. Look, there's no antagon when it says, huh? Right? That is really what the charge symmetry is telling us, is that if it's a symmetry, I should be seeing antiparticle everywhere. And, well, this is important, right? Why we are living in a matter universe, which is a good thing. Otherwise, it would be all turned into photons, right? And it's a good thing that we don't have antimatter around, but I know people are very curious why we don't. And this you can also ask Latham. That's not like think big questions. I mean, nobody solved it, so you can't ask me. I know some things that are solved. Okay, very good. So yes? Okay. If I found time, I can try to write this up. Like I have some scribbles there. I can try to actually write it into it. Yeah.
If there was charge symmetry, if charge conjugation symmetry, can we show that the number, does it follow that the number of particles and antiparticles have to be equal?
Yeah, I would think so, right? You have five particle, four antiparticle. You do charge conjugation, now you have four particle, five antiparticle. Then it's not a symmetry. So clearly in this room is not, and I think up to, well, people claim it's in our observable universe, but at least within our galaxy cluster, nobody see. I mean, it would be really like gamma rays coming everywhere. Yeah.
You saw yesterday that taking parity.
That's right. Yes. Based on this, if you look at the field, it will turn your left-handed field into a right-handed field.
And also it will take my particle to antiparticle.
As I said, you can't, when you talk about a field, you can't talk about a particle or antiparticle. It contains both. What do you mean by particle into antiparticle? That's what I want to emphasize. Is when you do your final project, which you don't even know what it is, but the label label your incoming particle with particle, says it's a fermion, anti-fermion. When you label Psi, I really have no idea what you're talking about. Okay, label them with, even you can just label them as electron positron, I don't care. But if you label with a Psi, I have no idea what is incoming. And there's, Then we kind of failed at the level step one of LHC. Yeah.
So is that like, is it B and then it goes to C, or is it supposed to be C dagger?
No, just a B and a C. I think I checked it this
so
morning.
Both annihilation operators.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so then what I'm trying to say. Okay, so yesterday you also say that now that there's charge conjugation, you can do this mini Lego thing. Is that I have a right-handed spinner, no problem, get charge conjugated. And this is how you made a neutral particle, right? Now you know why. This one is a Q, that one is a minus Q. If you add them up, it's very frustrating unless Q is equal to zero. And then you can also make a Dirac spinner.
I can see there's C minor. There's C, B, T, C minor.
But the C, C, B, P, S, C is the second C, like inverse, C inverse.
What? Oh, they are probably also because they square to one. That's cool. Okay, maybe I should keep the minus for C. Okay, yeah, that's right. Because we have a CC star equals one.
Yes.
So that minus sign should. Okay, good. Okay, so then we also see this, that if you happen to have only right-handed, and then you get a Dirac, right? You can just flip one, turn it into a left, and now you have a left to right again, and you make your Dirac field. Happy ending. And let's see. Okay, so this part is important. If you're telling me a story between, remember there's a story telling you, tell me all about the Dirac well and the Mariana spinners, and you should tell me how they are related. Otherwise, it's not a story. It's person A, person B, person C. That's called a, like a biology. No, like a B, it's like listing people's life and just in order, and there's no interaction, right? So tell me how they are related. How you can move from a well to Mariana to Dirac, what each of them do. So that's my conclusion of the story too. So each of a story, I'll expand a few lectures. Yeah.
Sorry. So is the Dirac?
No, because it's a different. Right. I was trying to make. See, it's a different. This one might not have. And this one has Q, and this one has minus Q. So they both together they have Q. So this is called a Q, okay, a circle, another circle. This carries minus Q, so particle and that particle together, Dirac. So good.
Q prime maybe some different Q.
Oh, they definitely does have to be the same. If you call them Dirac, because remember Dirac has to transform with a definite Q. Otherwise, look here. You're going to break the gauge symmetry, which I so hard to protect.
Why does the second psi R have a minus Q as charge? Isn't it conjugation minus Q?
It's a number. This is like 1.6 times 10 to the minus 19. This is minus 1.6 times 10 to 19. Huh? It's not neutral. See, this gets conjugated into a Q prime, then it just says the Dirac carries Q prime. So both this first term and the second term carries Q prime. That just tells us Dirac will transform with Q prime. Perfect.
Is it just because the conjugation gives us the antiparticle?
Yeah.
How come we have like two psi r's? Why is there psi r1 and psi r2?
Well, because this thing has 2 degrees of freedom. If you want to make a Dirac, which is 4 degrees of freedom, you'd better provide me some more degrees of freedom.
Why does the second one have the charge of minus q?
It has to, because after it flipped, it needs to be equal to this.
Oh.
What if you have plus Q for the second one? You get what you get?
You get some monsters I don't want to talk about. In your field, you're not going to get it. Because this is called a charge. If you have a Q and a Q, you're not going to satisfy this, then your Q is just a random number. It's not a charge.
Don't you get a neutral sign if your second one?
Then you get a Mirana. Right there. Okay. So now, finally, Dan comes in. You know, when Dan comes, always something fun happens. Dan has a question. Says, if you gave a Russian revolver to Aragog. Aragog?
Aragog.
Aragog. Like the giant spider in Harry Potter.
Yeah, Aragog.
Okay, very good. Dan says, what do you get if you give Russian revolver to an Aragog? So those two things can both be called
Nile spinner.
Now you combine them together. You will get a Dirac spinner, of course. Right? Okay, so, before we start more things, I just want to emphasize what we did yesterday is we start a fantasy of Lego building. Okay, now I'm gonna be not be tricked into endless writing. And actually write them. Okay, so now we have 5 building blocks. Any more interesting? Before we have 1 building block and it's copies. So now we have 5 different building blocks. Now you can do whatever you want. You can give the thing looks like a scalar, gave this thing a vector, and gave this thing some f mu nu. And then you can mix match. You can have many of them. So this, back then, is called a phi, right? When you write down the name direction for a scalar theory, you just say phi, and then you 2 the power n. And now you have all these things, and these are your individual building block. Whenever fermion participated in direction, it better pick one of these. You would never see a Dirac field somehow stand alone, because it will never meet a partner to get rid of the spinner index. So now you have a building block. You can write as many interactions as you want. And you can say this block to the power something, this block to the power of something, and then some other field, and just keep going, right? There are 5 of them. And some other fields. And eventually you just want to know that all the Lorentz index, the vector index, all get a contracted. You get something that doesn't have an index. And that would be a new interaction. And of course, the last lecture we will see why we don't see that, you know, monster interaction coming around. Why we only have a few interactions. Okay, so yes, with that I'll conclude the discussion about the discrete symmetries and P and C's and the interactions. Turns out that the discussion earns us a break, apparently. Okay, let's take a break. Because I'd rather the rest than not to take a break. The last is more continuous. Yeah, Dan has many stories. Dan says the predicted famine arrived when the islands of Lilliput were overrun by llamas, sheep, and a zebra. Uncountable hordes of these goat-like creatures overrun the islands and consumed most of the farmers' crop. The farmers were distraught and turned to our friends, the quantum field theorists for help. After much experimentation, the quantum field theorists created a therapy recipe for a potion that would solve their quadruple problems by causing the pests to scatter across the surrounding islands in the archipelago. They named this recipe the LSZ reduction formula. With that, what should we do now? What do you think?
Probably land, ship, sheep, zebra.
Yeah, the llama, sheep, zebra. Okay. So, we're going to do two fermions to two fermions. Just pick a choice. Then, by this, I mean the B particles. Another name for them. Okay, what's my starting point? Scattering. What's my starting point?
Scattering amplitude.
Yeah, what is it? Perfect. Okay, step one. What's step one? What's the step one of the LSD? If you start at FSI.
Define F and I.
Find F and I. Very good starting point. Okay. So I'm just going to write things that you saw before, except with a B, not an A, okay? And also our little one there include more information. Before you are used to this one, it includes momentum, but of course we are spinners. We are spin half particles. We should include the spin information. And okay, I hope this makes sense to you. Yes? So far I wasn't doing much. I write the two lines you have seen before and I turn the A into B. Okay. Is it okay? What's the next step? I have the...
Why did you use the interaction state instead of head zero? Why, for the vacuum?
Yeah, but okay, review what Dan said.
Okay.
I don't know. Dan said something, and then you all decide this is the interaction picture, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so. Oh, yeah, but Dan says there has to be us, otherwise I can't put this thing together to get that. Right? If I want to put this two thing together, the S has to go away, otherwise I'm in some trouble. And he says something about S can go either way and whatever. Okay, what's the next step? The next step should be straightforward. You said, I should have I and S, I and F. Now I have them. Combine them together. And I have all these theories. Oh, more formula than I would be happy to. Okay. Oh. Okay. Step two. Okay. Step two is a little complicated, but if you yeah, somewhat. See, you have seen this. with A's. Do you recall what's the next step?
Replace the A's.
Huh?
Replace the A's.
Replace the A by? By field. Remember that a really crazy trick? You turn this into some minus, and then there is an in, then there's what in between this and the minus. And then you can go through some calculation that I hope you got through in the last course. So I'll review you. Yeah, I don't know why I need another board, but you probably do. All right. So, like, operators are not good. Remember, in the end of the day, we use a bunch of weak contraction. We need a field. If we just bunch of operators, where did the field come from? And here is where field come from in Dan's version. Okay. And
assuming the Klein-Gordon equation is valid, so here.
Review his notes. I'm not going to tell you.
But it was Klein-Gordon equation. We're not dealing with Dirac equation.
No. That's Dan's part. There's only Klein-Gordon operator. And eventually, you at the beginning, you have a Klein-Gordon equation. And there is, I think it's something like you take a dot and you do an integral of dt. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, there's no way I can do that calculation. I don't even know if I can do the Dirac one. The point is that I'll invite you to do a leap of faith. But this is an important calculation. So if you have time, I really suggest you go through it. As you can see, this. It's very important for our LSD reduction formula. And it hasn't shown up yet. Okay, leap of faith. Here we go. I'll just write the same. The same thing for B. And I'll tell you that the number turned out to be a minus I for some reason, maybe because it's a fermion. Tell me, what the rest would be? I know we didn't do the calculation, but just look at this. And we're taking a leap of faith and go to Dirac case. What's the first term would be? Let's this. Label this, label that. Okay. What do you think the first term would be? The exponential. I mean, why would anything change with the exponential? The Dirac field also have all these Fourier transform things around, right? And that? Be careful what you said. It's almost right. One of them is right, I think. What it would be? Look at the second term. It's a Klein-Gordon operator. Now we study Dirac field. What do you think?
Dirac operator?
You get a Dirac operator. I mean, it's a good leap of faith, no? And what would it be third term? Psi. Almost got it. Well, there is one problem about this thing I just wrote. What's the problem?
He left a gap there.
Okay, there is a gap. What should I go in at a gap? What should it go into the gap? Yeah, there's the.
Contains both B and C.
That, no, it has only B. And. There's a spinner index needs to be contracted by something. I'll take the bar, okay? But I'm not a comfy. Huh? That's a. Very good guess.
Why you?
Because Psi's expansion is e to the minus ikx nu b and plus other stuff. But I want to extract what happened if I sort of invert this relationship of cosine b, and I'm guaranteed to get the exponential, get the plus. And then the rest, we know that it's going to be a Dirac operator on the Dirac field. So the only thing we need is this. Where did this go? Why did it has to go there? And now we need Lorentz invariant. It better come with a bar. See? You don't need to do any calculation. You of course, up to this minus I. But if you were like, okay, they were all going to come with all this I's minus I, whatever, it's going to be an overall factor. I would say that's pretty good. In 2 minutes, it's going to be taking way too longer than 2 minutes to derive this. Using the same step and derivation, turning this to that. Yeah. I would say it's almost as long as your Hamiltonian derivation. But this is the one we don't have to do. Just look at that one. You would expect had better be this. No idea that you have to. You can't get to the numerics. You can get to the form. If I also can get to the numerics, well, I would be very proud of myself. Yeah?
How do you know you should construct the sidebar? Because the sidebar contains the u.
No. It comes from here. You want to invert this relationship. It has nothing to do with sidebar, right? This is the relationship you want to invert to get a B. Remember, we're trying to get a B. B only shows up here. All the other part and your bars, and they don't have B. They might have a B dagger, but that's not the one I'm computing. I'm computing for B. Okay. Yeah, so I would say that's not too shabby. And then you can take a dagger of this thing, but then you can, of course, just do what I said. Right? You kind of try to guess what everything is. And then, okay, I'll slowly write out what's this. The derivation of this is in the notes. The derivation of that is not in the notes. And I skip, the only reason I skip derivation is you have to do it yourself. Okay? So that's like, if I would give you another homework, which I wouldn't, this would be the homework. Because it gave us everything we need to eventually tell us how to evaluate the interaction. And the Sanos has the solution of that. Okay, so here, more leap of faith. Let's do the easy one. What would this become? It would be minus. I'm only taking a dagger. And now, unfortunately, we have to take the dagger of this whole thing. So let's start with here. It would be Zeidegger. But knowing that we're going to get some Lorentz invariant, we'd better have a bar. Right? Then we do this. What's this? If you do this and you do that.
The minus sign and the minus I?
I have no idea. That's the answer somehow. I'll check. Question mark. I have to check. I did the calculation more properly in the notes, so I can check. But it might be there, because my bar. And what will this become? It'll become a U1 somewhere. And what's in the middle?
Operator.
It will be an operator that the app operates on. On psi bar, right? And this is exactly the operator acting on psi bar if you take a complex conjugate of Dirac equation. or you can derive Dirac equation using, remember, we are in this picture, says this is beautiful, I get a Dirac equation. Oh, you can, I mean, you can do this, right? Then you will get the equation of motion of bar, and it looks like that. Just like you have Lagrangian, you have Poisson, you have Poisson bar. If you do Poisson bar, you'll get the Dirac equation. If you do Poisson, you'll get the equation motion for Poisson bar, which exactly looks like this. And that's the other Dirac operator, less well-known Dirac operator. Oh, no. Because there is a partial derivative, so I have to write like this, so this thing will never acting on exponentials.
Is this operator just the derivative of this operator?
So if you take your Dirac operation, Dirac equation, take a dagger, maybe add a bar, then you'll get that thing. You turn it. The easiest way is do this. You have a Lagrangian. You have this. And you also have this. So you must be able to figure out what's the equation of motion out of that. It's just not as easy as this one. And then it's going to be that. And then you can also just take a dagger and take a dagger of the Dirac equation. And yeah, at this point, I don't know where the gamma zero come out, get out.
Oh, right.
They should be. Yeah.
Is this right action to say, like, can you write it as the normal?
Can I write it normally?
Well, with the psi on the right hand side, does it work?
No, it can't. It acts on the Poisson bar, and this thing is a.
No, I mean, like, can you write it in terms of the Poisson bar being on the right and the operator also acts on the right?
Because this is the matrix multiplication. You move this to the other side. I don't know what you're doing. So the way to interpret this is really use this to acting on a Poisson bar. And that's what it is. Because before you have phi, you have one Klein-Gordon operator. But now we have Poisson and a Poisson bar. They both need operator to go with it. Okay. So since tomorrow we're going to actually look at the LSZ more in more detail. So I'm just not going to write them. Tomorrow I'll try to write this fermionic LSZ once in my life on board. It's very long. But what I hope is that you can recognize now you have some I1, I2, I3, I4 barred or not. You can pull everything out of this thing, pull out of the correlation function, and whatever you get in the middle is very similar to what you have. Okay, instead of writing two of this over here and two of this over there, I'll just say you'll get something stuff, crazy stuff we're going to deal with tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll deal with this. It's important to deal with them because I hope you want, like, if you open the QFT book and I hope you wondered together with me, it's always like, huh? There's just like a list of Feynman rules for fermions and that's it. Where's that explanation for it, right? And we'll do it the proper way tomorrow, which is decipher what all this integral are. But now you know, sort of know, that it's going to be come in the same way as in the scalar field, we can even guess the answer up to some minus signs and i's. still a worthwhile calculation to do to confirm that our guess is right. And I did take the dagger here, and it's in the notes. Okay. So let's see tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll figure out the Feynman rules. And today we'll keep going. And what's the next step?
Do you have to do something with the bubbles and divide out?
Ah, yeah, that bubbles. Okay, great. I like the bubbles. So I'll write the bubbles first. Here's are your bubbles. Here we go. Bubbles. What's up there?
You have rod here in the numerator as well, don't you?
What?
Not rod omega.
Oh, that's right. That is absolutely right. But what's in the middle of these is zero. So this is where we go from omega to zero. Right? We have seen this a few times. You see in dance course how this happened. But you also, in the first half, there is all this asymptotic state and leads to the particle. In some ways, yes, we are able to deal with omega.
No.
Might not be like, might not the COVID is final evolution. This omega we know how to deal with. What is it? What goes here? Huh?
Size zeros and size zero bars.
Size zeros and the size zero bars. Very good. And I decided to take all those size zeros off. Because for no good reasons, but I can rattle. And there is also this, right? Otherwise, we have no interaction to expand. That will make life easy, but incorrect. Okay. Now we have some, instead of phi's all the way, now we have some psi's, and now we have some psi bars. It's pretty similar to what you did before. I mean, nothing will really go differently. If you turn into fermions, all this argument about the interaction picture, interaction vacuum to regular vacuum, everything would go through. Except you have that tells us it's a 4-point correlation function over there and a 2n-point correlation over here. All good?
Yeah.
Yay. And the last step is
vacuum. So, I don't know.
What
are we talking about?
Oh, no, how come the bars have n plus 1 through 2n? How come it doesn't just go back to 1 through x1 through xn?
I just want to pick a different location, like all the field can be.
Oh, okay.
So that's coming from all these integrals. So I'll be writing lots of integrals outside, and then they would all have different dummy index for x. Okay. What's the last step? Do a Taylor expansion. That's right. But that's even last step. That's the step we do tomorrow. What's the last step? What's the next step? Normal order, that's very good. Normal order and the contraction. I'll write both down. I'll write it in the scalar field first. No more order in the contraction. Very good. What does this give me?
Time order.
Time order. Okay, very good. Guess what will happen in the Dirac field case? Nothing will happen. I'm just copying down the same line. A minus on will come, but this is basically in both cases we're going to define the contraction to be the difference between time and the normal ordering. So there is a minus sign hidden in normal ordering, and there is going to be a sign somewhere to keep things good intact. But in the definition itself, there's no minus sign. It's like we wouldn't expect all these fermions with minus. We should expect. But anyway, we decided to proceed as if they don't until they force up on us to introduce.
So the weak compression here is anti-commutator, as opposed to the commutator?
That's very good. That's okay. 2 pages later, so we'll get there. That's very good. The expectation is very correct. Because if you are talking about the Dirac field, there better be an anti-commutator. How would I know how to compute a commutator in this case? Okay, that's very good. And here, okay, let's define time order. And the time ordering is, okay, if x is time tx, x0 is bigger than y0, what happens in scalar field?
X y.
Yeah, nothing happens. That's the correct order. And if y0 bigger than x0, what happens?
They switch
because, well, after they switch, they will have the correct order. That's very beautifully done. And see, the thing is, what you said is basically telling me what I should do, right? You said that they switch in this case. What happens in Dirac? Switching things is not good. We have to introduce minus sign. At this point, we're just doing some definition, so it doesn't matter if there's bars or no bars. So suppose if they are good order. Good order is always good order. We don't do anything with it, but if your order is bad and I have to switch, the minus signs comes. None of this is good, right? There are some minus signs introduced when you do a normal order. If there's no minus signs introduced in time order, you'll be like,
Does anything weird happen if one of them has a bar on top of it?
Nope. You could totally do bar, bar, bar.
Sorry, where does the minus sign exist?
Because you swapped the two fermion fields. I can give you a better explanation, but do I have a time? Okay. I can.
Commutator.
It's from the anti-commutator. But if you have a bar, then you have something non-zero.
But I thought the time order operator switched it without the application of the commutators or anti-commutators.
And because you used to have a commutator. The obligation of anti-commutators is when you swap, you pick up a minus sign. Because we're in this, in the ruling of this thing now. Okay, so the proposal to do is that I take off all the bars and put this a plus sign and take a time ordering on both sides, and then you will be, there will be problem. And if you define time ordering for one set, you should define the time ordering the same for all the fields. It's in the notes. There, in notes, there is a slightly more argument about that minus sign. Because basically, if you define to the plus sign, you'll run into some contradiction. Okay, so now remember how we actually compute this? Like, we want the contraction, and we have this. This step is sort of important. So what did we do in Dansky's? How do I turn time ordering things into normal ordering? What the normal ordering needs. At this point, there's nothing to. How could we normal order two fields?
Can you take the call possible with contractions or something?
Later. Oh, okay. We'll do that later. That's the.
Yeah.
How did we manage to calculate the contraction out of this?
Just swap them and use the commutator relation.
You split them.
Yeah, okay.
Split them. Split them into a creation field and annihilation field. Because it's only when they are split, we can normal order them. I mean, how this is going to be different, right? We'll do the same. So let's see. I'll compute this thing that's one term, and this is the other term, and I split it. Okay. Tell me what made which term, what meet which term that we are going to not be normal. Out of four terms, there should be only one problematic one.
Which one is that?
Right? This one says annihilation is in front of creation. Well, that's a disaster. There's two terms, plus, plus, minus, minus. That's fine. You'd only have one type. But then there's a plus minus, that's fine too, because that's ordered. That term is a disaster. Not good. And what do we want to do? Normal order them and swap them. And this thing is the good thing. I like this thing. Except this one is not going to combine with the other three to give me normal ordering because it's lack of a good. But what's the thing I'm missing in this term? So I swept them.
Minus sign.
Right? Only this is the normal ordering of that. With the minus. See, now you know for the rest of the class, if I ask anything, if it's like a minus sign, you might get some of them. And quite a few. Okay, there are many, many minus signs. So now I claim that if I take this thing I want, which is time ordered at x0 bigger than y0, I can happily take it away. And then this is all the four terms, but the one term is not good. So I subtract the bad term, and now I added the good term. And this together should give me the normal ordering. Right? I say this whole thing is all good except this one. So I'm going to subtract it and add the correct normal ordered one back. This should give me normal ordering, which means whatever happens here will be our contraction with a minus sign because it is supposed to be time ordering subtract the normal order.
Why do we have a minus sign in the normal ordering? This thing, I don't understand.
This is a creation field, this is an annihilation field, and I swept them. So it's annihilation, creation, creation, annihilation. That's how the normal ordering is. You remember?
But the normal ordering in the boson picture was just plus.
Right? But we did go through this. So as if you want to normal order, you have to have minus one.
Right.
That's how we get a correct Hamiltonian. That's precisely that.
Yes.
And where I am? We decided that the difference is difference must be the contraction we're looking for. It's a plus outside. What do you think why I have put a plus sign here? Any guesses? This is x zero bigger than y zero. Y is bigger than x0. You can go through the same argument, very, very similar, but I remember your time ordering will introduce minus sign, and normal ordering will introduce minus sign. And then, after dust settles, I mean, you see, this is not a hard calculation. It's just looking at the four terms, find the term that is bad, and take it away, then you will find things. And you defined your weak contraction. And indeed, anti-commutators show up. And the only thing we need to do is compute that thing. But by now, okay, I'll write it in the less, okay. This is the annihilation field, and this is the creation field. And you can see something interesting. I'll take a comment. And the only thing you need to do is to take the anti-commutator of this. And you can see what's going to happen is the commutator of the creation annihilation operators will disappear. Right? You anti-commute, you get a bunch of stuff that just kills one integral, and that's everything that's left. Okay. you might want to repeat this calculation that if you haven't done a bunch of a similar calculation yet. But the idea is now you open your table, identity table, and pull out the correct one, stick it in. And the other one, you do a very similar calculation. Skipping a few steps, but you can find out that the final result, how do I combine the results I get from the time ordering things? If I have a time ordering, if I have something calculated from here, something calculated to get from here, use a step function. Very good. And this is the result. This is quite a few lines of calculation. But none of them are not that important. It's like you change P into derivative, pull it out, and you do a similar calculation with the other term. You get some spinner identity from the V's, turn into P, pull it out as a derivative, and you end up with this. The important part, though, is what's this?
Propagator.
What a propagator?
Similar to Feynman.
It doesn't have.
You can add a. You can add a p integral p zero to the.
Right. This is the what you get from the scalar case, doing similar calculations, relating to creation annihilation field, find that the thing that is different, and do a commutator, turn it into normal ordering, calculate the contraction, and combine them together.
The contour integral.
Huh?
Contour integral.
Yeah, then you do a contour integral, and the final result in this huge branches is the Feynman propagator for scalar field. Yeah.
Psi defined to be psi plus psi minus?
Psi is defined to be psi plus psi. That's right.
So shouldn't we have V and C dagger there?
No, this is the bar.
But it's the bar of psi plus psi.
You first do bar and then you separate them. It's just a convention. So you do this first and then you do separate. You can do use other convention. It's just the convention I use. And
does it make any difference if you do the plus first and then the bar second?
But then the point is this is my goal, right? And then if you do the plus and then dagger thing, I'm not sure this is going to be equal. Question mark. So maybe it does. Let me see. If you do the plus, no, minus, you get this, and then you burn. Then you're fine. You just like switch the two definitions. Like my plus minus for bar is the different from. Yeah, you'll be fine. And I mean, are you surprised that the fermion propagator is related to the boson propagator? Not really, right? Because they all come from Klein-Gordon equation. And so now if you use the momentum go to the momentum space with all this contour integral and I epsilon stuff, end, that's what you will get. You will turn those partial derivative back to momentum. And then you're like, ooh, our first Feynman property. And now you know where the top part come from. It come from all these spinner identities. I mean, everything else is the same. But you have a little top part, which is also important, which means that if you have a second order derivative, you will have a 1 over p squared or something. And if you have a first order derivative, you have something like 1 over p. If you're just counting power of p. Yeah.
Since we are using spinner identities, this propagator is on shell. We are assuming the equations of motion to be true already.
Well, I thought it would become off shell is when you do all this contouring. Right? That's one. So it happens before that. These spinner identities while still have assuming on shell, it's really when you combine them together, want to turn this into a fourth integral, that's when we lost the shell. When before they're on shell, then you lost your shell because you do this integral on the p.
So p squared is m squared here, and
before this line. On shell, and then you do something miracle between you. Then you become off shell.
This M comes from the Lagrangian.
The M should be coming from the Lagrangian.
But when we write U bar as P cut plus N.
Wait. Okay. How about we deal with all this normalization things on the last day? Like M is from Lagrangian, I mean from physical mass. I have to disentangle myself a little bit about it. Yeah.